When we were born, they tried to cover our eyes. Then they tried to tell us all what to see. We are discovering that did not work, for we were born to be free. It's a gay spirit singing in our hearts, leading us through these troubled times. It's a gay spirit moving this land, calling us to a time of open love.
This is J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Queer Music Heritage, a part of Queer Voices on KPFT. That opening song is called Gay Spirit and is by Charlie Murphy, and it's from an album I'm paying special tribute to this month. The album was released in 1979 and was called Walls to Roses, Songs of Changing Men, and I've always considered it a landmark album, in that not only was it the first various artists album including both gay and straight men, but for the focus of the album. In the over 8 years of doing QMH, I've never done a show featuring just one album. That's how important I think this recording is. The album was conceived by folk artist Willie Sardillo with the broad goal of presenting music as a vehicle to unify men against sexism and to examine and express more positively what it could mean to be a man in our society. So this show will not only include the music and story of the album, but also the voices. I've interviewed several of the artists from the Walls to Roses Music Collective, and the logical place to start is with the album's producer. So I ask Willie Sardillo to tell me about the making of the album, Walls to Roses.
Well, my friend George Puljanidhi Shakar, who was part of the collective, always says that if we had known what we were doing, we would never have been able to make the recording. But because we didn't know anything, we kind of did the almost impossible. The long story is, I started going to some national conferences on men and masculinity, which were starting to take place in different places around the country. They were pro-feminist and pro-gay and lesbian conferences focusing on all sorts of issues related to sexuality, sexual identity, and the treatment of women in our culture. At the first one of these I went to, which was in Iowa, which was in 1977 in Des Moines, that was the third one of these conferences, I heard a man named Jeff Morgan singing songs. Jeff was an established country songwriter in Nashville, Tennessee. He had written hit songs for major artists, Dolly Parton and people like that, but had become very active in the burgeoning men's movement and started putting his songwriting talents to work around issues related to that. So I heard him sing and was very, very moved by it. It was the start of something that was a male version of what Holly Near was doing. And I'd been listening to Holly and some of the other women's movement singer-songwriters. And I started writing songs. I'm not sure if I had started writing songs before I heard Jeff, or I know that hearing Jeff was an important point for me. And he inspired a number of us to start writing more songs in that direction. It certainly occurred to me that there was a male voice to be heard in the culture wars around issues of sexual politics. So not too long after, I started looking for other men who were musicians, who were dealing with these kinds of issues, and put together a loose collective of men from around the country, most of whom had not met each other, with the idea of getting together in one location and in a few days, meeting each other, working collectively to determine a repertoire, learning and rehearsing and arranging songs, and recording an album. Even before we got together, Moses Ash at Folkways Records, when I approached him about this idea, was immediately very positive and said he would distribute the recording. He'd put it out on his label. And so we went about trying to do some fundraising to get the money together to make this thing happen, both both to help with transportation expenses for people who were coming from a long distance and also to pay for the recording costs. It was just unheard of to do anything that fast. In 4 days, we did a benefit concert to help pay for the recording. We met each other for the first time. We chose the songs. We did all the rehearsing, arranging, and all the recording. It was kind of a real whirlwind, and most recording processes take much more time in the studio. So that's basically what happened. We got together in my apartment in Cambridge, Massachusetts at the time, and had an intense few days in 1978, in August of 1978.
One of the resources I'm very pleased to have in doing this show is a radio documentary produced in 1978 by Eric Gordon on the making of the album. He was one of the members of the collective, and as he had been doing radio, recorded some of the weekend's activities. So this is a valuable capturing of a piece of our history. I'll use bits of that production later in the show, but I wanted to let you hear right off his reading the introduction he wrote for the booklet that came with the album.
Most of us had never met before we began work at 9 a.m. on a steamy Saturday, August 12, 1978, in a Cambridge living room. We had come from as far away as Minneapolis, Denver, Portland, Oregon, and San Francisco, from as close as around the corner. After our all-too-brief initial introductions, we started the process of selecting the 10 songs for the album out of the 60 that men had sent in from around the country. We looked for songs showing the variety of our experiences as men and for an exciting mix of musical and lyrical styles. We tried to include songs that reflect some of our other concerns, too, for as a collective, we are unified in our commitment to replace a society which values white, male, heterosexual prerogatives with one which is truly egalitarian with regard not only to sex and sexual orientation, but to race, ethnic background, age, creed, and class.
Back to Willie, as I wanted to flesh out how the artists were chosen and how the songs were chosen.
Well, the artists were chosen, a lot of it was word of mouth. I think I put out some advertising in things like Gay Community News and The Real Paper in the Boston area. So I started to meet, and I would go to a lot of concerts and be looking, and I had my eyes open for men who were doing something that was related. I knew Fred Small already. I met some people through placing these ads. I got some phone calls. I think that's how I met George. And then George knew some other people, Kenny Arkin, Michael Husson. I met through hearing him play with Marcia Taylor. It was kind of like one person would lead to another. And I also just, when I'd hear about somebody, I would call them or write them, try to get in touch with them. Or, you know, I knew about Jeff Langley from his work with Holly Near. I figured somebody working with Holly Near would probably be pretty sympathetic to this whole idea. So I was able to get in touch with him, and he and I met in New York a couple of times. Although he didn't actually come participate in the recording sessions, he was more experienced than most of us and was very supportive and gave us a lot of knowledge behind the scenes, and did come up at the Boston area to help do some of the mixing.
And his song became the title song.
Yes. Even though he wasn't there for the actual recording sessions, his presence was very strongly felt. So those of us who did get together, got together in my apartment in Cambridge. We had circulated cassette tapes before that of possible repertoire, just so that we could hear what each other was doing, so we could have an idea of some of the possible songs. But we didn't make any decisions about the repertoire until we actually got together. And when we got together, we played the songs live for each other and then went through endless discussions to try to hone down the repertoire that seemed like it was most powerful and that covered a range of issues. The majority of men who were part of this were gay men, and a lot of the material that they were singing and writing was reflective of that particular experience and point of view, and that was certainly consistent with the message we wanted to put out. So there's a very strong gay liberation component to the recording, but it's also, I think, important to point out that it's, you know, obviously the gay community is very, very diverse. You can't pin it down to one way of thinking or looking at the world, and the unifying factor in this particular project for the gay and the straight men was that there was a pro-feminist understanding and vision behind all of our song choices and all of what we were doing.
There were 17 members of the Walls to Roses Collective, and of course, not everyone could get their song on the album. But many of them sang or played instruments on the songs, while others sang lead. I want to acknowledge the names of all of the members, as they all contributed to the process. Willie has mentioned some of them, but the complete list is Tom Alphs, Kenny Arkin, Blackberry, George Fujiniti Shikar, Johnny Golden, Eric Gordon, Christopher Hershey, Michael Husson, Charlie King, Jeff Langley, Ray Makeever, Jeff Morgan, Charlie Murphy, Robbie Rosenberg, Fred Small, Willie Sardillo, and Chris Tanner. If you visit my website, you'll find additional information about the individual careers of these artists. Okay, we've gone far too long without music, and it's important to hear the title track that Willie mentioned, Jeff Langley's song, Walls to Roses. On the album singing lead was Kenny Arkin, but I've got a special treat. I've got a demo recording of the song sung by Jeff Langley, so this is how the collective would have heard it. Yes, the album version is more polished, with backing vocals, but here is real history, the original song, Walls to Roses.
Father, I can't see how you saw me an athlete, but I sweated each season for you. It seemed that these fingers did better with singers, but I needed a smile from you. The day of the series, I played pretty dreary, but I broke my left elbow for you. I know I disgraced you, I just couldn't face you, but I cried all night in my room. Well, I've gotta tell you that I'm glad it's over, I've waited so long just to be your friend. Oh, I hope you've erased all your thoughts about baseball, cause I'm feeling so good about you. Moses, walls are tumbling to the ground. I can see roses springing up on the ground. Amy, I've wanted to tell you I'm haunted by the night that I made it with you. You were a freshman when I popped the question. I remember the pain you went through. Some of the fellas got angry and jealous that you went out with me and not them. They'd sit and kid me, I hadn't it in me, and I gave in to fear in the end. Well, I've gotta tell you that I'm glad it's over, I've waited so long just to be your friend. Oh, I hope you've excused me for the time I abused you, I'm feeling so good about you. Golly gee, Moses, to the ground, I can see roses springing up all around. Faggots and fairies, Tom, Dick, and Harry, sugar with spice wasn't nice. When I met Bobby, girls were my hobby, but they were costing twice the price. Musical summer, you were the drummer, we played a lot of songs that June. And as we got tighter, choices grew wider, but I couldn't quite cut that tune. Well, I've gotta tell you that I'm glad it's over, I've waited so long just to be your friend. And now I'm expressing what you tried confessing, and I'm feeling so good about you. Golly gee, Moses, walls are tumbling to the ground. I can see roses springing up all around. Golly gee, Moses, walls are tumbling to the ground. I can see roses springing up, springing up, springing up.
Walls to Roses by Jeff Langley. And as Willie mentioned, Jeff is probably most known to my listeners for his association with Holly Near, playing piano on her early recordings and on tour. One nice aspect of the project was that the collective made a conscious decision to use women in support of the recording whenever possible, as musicians, engineer, and photographer. I see Karen Kane's name on so many albums in my collection, and this was one of her first projects.
Yes. Karen was wonderful. She was great. I learned about Karen from Joanna Kasdan. She had engineered Joanna's album, so Joanna put me in touch with Karen. Karen was totally into the whole idea. It was great. She was wonderful to work with.
Willie Sardillo was one of several straight artists involved with the project, and the song of his that was used indeed is an unusual one to come from a straight man. Tell me about your song from the album, For My Men Friends.
Well, that song, each verse speaks about a different friendship with a man who had been an important friend to me. The verse about fishing with a friend was just before I left Indiana to come to the Boston area to try to make my mark as a musician, as it were. I had this little farewell fishing trip with a friend, close friend, John, who was one of the men who I was in a men's consciousness-raising group with. That verse came about. The verse where the man kisses me is an old high school friend who I also worked a summer job with a couple of summers. And the little scene described in that verse took place at this summer camp where we were counselors together. It was just an attempt to express my deep affection for my men friends, you know, something that particularly straight men were not expressing a whole lot. There was all the unspoken elements of closeness, but not often given voice to, at least in the culture that I grew up in. And this was an attempt to give voice and praise and thanks to the men and the friendships that I had enjoyed.
Though some of you I'll never see again, the memory of your closeness is enough. When I think of what we've shared as boys and men, I know we've shared a special kind of love. I know whatever I may do, a part of you comes with me too. I know the things I've shared with you can't be replaced, just added to. And to each one of you, wherever you may be, I want to thank you for the love you gave to me. As little boys, our common bond began, growing together from the start. Was it playing with toy trucks there in the sand that I first felt your impression on my heart? Exploring fields of fantasy, of wars and heroes strong and free, conquering the city park, playing baseball after dark, and all kinds of things we didn't understand about the early training of a man. They say that opposites attract, and hearts are just like magnets that justify priority to some romantic fantasy. But likeness bears a bond that lasts, our commonness a knot tied fast. Let's celebrate the love we've shared these years. I remember so well that summer day. We worked together at a camp. The sun beat down, the heat was there to stay. And she and I were sitting in the sand. You came up softly behind me, kissed her quick, kissed me. You showed your feelings honestly and said, who cares if others see? You knew our love was real, you weren't ashamed. I learned a lot about myself that day.
That was a bit of For My Men Friends by Willie Sordillo. And some of you may have this album and notice that on it, his name is given as Sordill. Well, Sordillo was a family name, and after the album, he decided to reclaim it, and his current band is the Willie Sordillo Trio. Do you remember any particular song that you really wished had fit on the album that really stood out?
Actually, I don't. But, you know, I would say that there were people who were involved in the project who I wish had a song on the album. And in particular, I really wish that Charlie King, Charlie was part of the whole project. He was there for the recording process, and yet his voice is not heard in any way except for group chorus kinds of things. You know, Charlie is one of the better singer-songwriters in the social justice movement. Been out there doing it for years and years and years, and still out there doing it. He was a great songwriter then, and he continues to be. Unfortunately, none of the songs that he presented to us really seemed to address the issues as concretely as we wanted them addressed. You know, one of the things I wish was different was that there was one of his songs on the recording.
Yes, I have interviewed him, seen him several times. He's marvelous.
But I can't remember a particular song that didn't make it. I don't really remember a lot about the songs that didn't make it. We really were going for what we thought were the strongest songs of those presented, and that's why there are some people like Chris Tanner has a couple of his songs on there, and Blackberry has a couple of songs. And you know, we did talk about, do we want to limit it to one per person to make it more inclusive, or do we want to go for what we think is the strongest material? And we opted for the latter. I don't know if we were to do it again, I don't know if I would argue to do it that way. I mean, obviously you want the strongest album possible, but it's an interesting project because the process was as important as the product. And again, I think we're missing something by not having Charlie King more visible on the recording.
It must have been quite an experience for 17 very different artists to, for this weekend, form a collective and make decisions on picking only 10 songs among the 60 submitted. And thanks to Eric Gordon's radio documentary, I've got a bit of that to share with you, concerning a song that did not make the final cut. Remember, this recording was done on the fly during the meetings, so you'll have to forgive the sound quality of this 30-year-old recording. You'll first hear Jeff Morgan singing a bit of his song, Homophobia, and then comments from several collective members, including himself, discussing the song.
Back when I was very young, you know I was a curious boy. And one day my daddy called me alone. He said, son, you know that ain't no toy. You keep playing all by yourself and you never learn the social rules. My son's gonna be some football hero, not one of those sissy fools. And now it's homophobia in the locker room when I do the gym. Homophobia, Lord, it keeps me from touching my friends. Well, I don't remember who told me exactly or when I first heard, but I could tell by the tone in the voice or the meaning of the words. The woman teachers who lived alone, oh, everybody said we're weird. And some strange man giving me a ride, oh, was something that I always feared. And now it's homophobia in the locker room and I took gym.
I think it's a terrific song. You definitely ought to be on the album. And I mean, the incredible beat to it. It's singable. It's danceable. My God, this is going to be a top 40. It blows me away. I love it. And I think it'll be on the album.
I feel just the opposite. I don't think it's got a whole lot of depth of thought to it. The point about homophobia, when the album is over, it's not really clear to me how all those connections are made. the homophobia, I don't think that that consistently is present in the verses. If it is, it's not clear to me. And it's, in other words, it's unevenly portrayed from lyric to lyric. And when I heard that was one of the songs that Jeff had submitted, I was wondering if he was holding back some of his better ones. I was really disappointed.
I normally perform that song and like it a lot in general. When I consider it, and I voted for it the first time around, considering what everybody's been saying about other songs, I'm not as enthusiastic about it as I was. It doesn't seem as strong as many other songs that people are submitting, even though I think it's an important song. It doesn't seem as strong as some of this material.
There's a couple of things in the song that were offensive to me. The general tone of it was offensive to me. In particular, he uses the phrase sissy fools. I didn't like that.
I understand both sides of those comments, but never fear, the song was released a couple years later on Jeff Morgan's 1980 album, It Comes With the Plumbing. And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Saturday night, Sunday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. In the Walls to Roses project, there was a controversial song that did make it to the final album. And it was a song that was debated because, if I can take the liberty of summing it up, it expressed the story of a sissy fag. The song was called The Sensitive Little Boy, written and sung by Chris Tanner, and I talked to Chris about those times. The recording of the album happened over the weekend of August 12, 1978. What are your main memories of those few days?
Oh, gosh. This is an anniversary day, isn't it? 30 years ago. Hot, wonderful people, and really, really hard. Working a collective process was really, really difficult. And when we did our final vote to put the songs on, which songs we were going to put on it, The Sensitive Little Boy was up against some other song that I didn't think had that much to say about anything. Anyway, and they didn't want to put Sensitive Little Boy on it. There's a whole little group in there that fought against putting it on the album. And I said, that's exactly why it needs to be on there, because you guys are afraid of it. And they were. And I think it was because they thought nobody'd buy it. And when it premiered after our concert in Boston, they wouldn't play that song on the radio. Maybe they were right, but that even made it more important. So there was a little group of us sissy fags there that just sat and said, we're not going to do anything. We pulled a diva thing on them and said, we're not doing anything until that song's going to be on there.
Let's pause and talk about that song.
Okay.
Tell me about Sensitive Little Boy.
That's my life story. That's growing up effeminate. Grade school, high school, college, and finally realizing that it was okay. I mean, one of the first one about grade school, trying to play baseball, you know, with a baseball, and my wrists were too limp, whatever. My dad was a coach for Little League, and I was, center field or left field, whichever one, you know, the worst guy gets to go out and play in, the one where they never hit the ball. That's where I played. That's what that song is about, just different sections of my life. And that I was the reject, the femme. Ba 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 da ba 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 da ba ba da ba 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 da ba.
I'm the latent homosexual. I'm the closeted queen.
I'm the sensitive little boy. Skirts instead of jeans, and in my left ear I wear an earring. In first grade it was alright for the boys to play with girls, but by third grade football was how we got our thrills. When they would throw the ball to me, I always missed. I never could explain that it simply hurt my wrist. 'Cause I'm the latent homosexual and the closeted queen. I'm the sensitive little boy that the bullies treat so mean. I'm the faggot, I'm the fairy, I wear skirts instead of jeans. And in my left ear I wear an earring. High school was the dating years, but I never had much luck. I had a girlfriend here and there, but I never wanted to. At lunch all the guys would sit and talk about who got who in bed. I would just sit and eat my lunch while singing in my head. I'm the latent homosexual, I'm the closeted queen. I'm the sensitive little boy that the bullies treat so mean. I'm the faggot, I'm the fairy, I wear skirts instead of jeans. And in my left ear I wear an earring. I went away to college, no more mom and no more dad. Finding out just who I was the only task I had. One night this guy made a pass at me after we had had a lot to drink. He said, "Do you want to come to my place?" I had to stop and think. Do I risk my family finding out that their little boy is a queer? So I hesitated and then said, "Hell yes," and drank another beer. 'Cause I'm the latent homosexual and the closeted queen. I'm the sensitive little boy that the bullies treat so mean. I'm the faggot, I'm the fairy, I wear skirts instead of jeans. And in my left ear, and in my right ear, and in my nose, I wear an earring.
When you performed that song, what was the reaction?
It was really, very interesting. If it was a gay audience or a woman's audience, they absolutely loved it. Women were always supportive of me. In fact, for a long time, I would do concerts, and probably 75 or 80% of the people there would be women. Just this direct spillover from the women's movement, women's songs. And back in the Holly Near days, and Mae Christian and Chris Williamson and all those people that I loved still. Anyway, so I sought out crowds that would like me, pretty much. Except for when we do colleges and stuff, there'd be some people getting pretty freaky. I've been booed and tried to beat me up, and you know, some guy said he was going to kill me and stuff. And if I performed in San Francisco this one time, and I performed anyway, and that was scary, but you know, you got to do it. It was a pretty radical song. I didn't realize it when I wrote it. I just said, "Well, that's about me right there," and then I started singing it, and that's just. It was the Waltz to Roses album that I came out to my parents with. So can you imagine?
I'd like to hear about the coming out part.
They didn't know I was gay. And I told them that I was going to Boston to record an album on Folkways. And they were excited for me and stuff. Well, then the album came out, and they kept saying, "When's the album going to come out?" And I said, "Oh, pretty soon. There's a few delays." And about a year and a half later, "When's that album coming out?" And I said, "Okay, it's already out." And I gave it to him, and I wrote him a long letter and stuck it inside and said, "Here you go." And I didn't talk to him for about 2 years. After that, they totally flipped out about it. And because not only was I gay, I think they probably could have dealt with talking to me about that. I came out publicly, like on a record, and that was just, like, too much for them to deal with.
You were gay to the world.
Yep. And now... it's kind of funny how all that turned around. And when the Smithsonian bought all Folkways records, I'm now in the Smithsonian. So Michael and I went out to tell my parents, you know, that album of shame, we called it, it's in the Smithsonian now. And they were really excited about that, and it was really great.
Chris Tanner mentioned his partner Michael in that comment. They combined their names and for a number of years now have been recording under the name Von Tanner. And I just love the name of their website, ScreamLikeAGirl.com. And he mentioned something I wanted to bring up. A few years ago, the Smithsonian Institute acquired the entire catalog of Folkways Records. And here's the incredible part. You can order from them on CD every Folkways record ever released. So Chris is right. The Walls to Roses album is in the Smithsonian. I want to talk more about the collective. It sounds like it was not all roses that weekend.
No, it wasn't. And I sure wish I knew what Charlie and Willie said before you talked to me, because I hope I don't burst anybody's bubble. There was lots of really nice people there, and there were just the undertows of what straight men are like, and some gay men that felt like that they had to, you know, please the straight man or whatever. And it was Robbie and I and, oh gosh, one other guy. Kenny Arkin, that's who the other guy was. That was in our little group. And there were three of us. We became this, like, little groupy thing. And we just, like, hung out with each other and talked to each other about our experiences and became really good friends from that. Charlie was one of those two. We just kind of, like, stood up to those boys and said, no, we're not falling for your crap, you know. You got to really deal with this. And a lot of them did, and a couple of them, I think, kind of walked away from the experience of not really liking it because they were threatened or something. But it was a tough one.
With all the artists involved, and I've been told there were like some 60 songs submitted, mm-hmm. two of yours and two of Blackberry's were chosen. Was there jealousy about that?
Yeah. Jealousy, yes, and also an excuse of why we couldn't vote for you to have another song. We'll just leave that one out because you already got one. So I think it worked both ways. I feel like there's a purpose to those songs, and when I still listen to it, the whole album, I think there's like three or four songs that make me go, oh, wow, there's something. Maybe it's because it's me, but I think my songs speak to what we were trying to do, and that was talk about sexism.
What did you learn from the Walls to Roses experience?
I learned that gay men are universal, that no matter where you come from or what part of the country or whatever you grew up in, what kind of family you had and stuff, that we all have this certain something about being gay that's just indescribable. I hadn't met a lot of gay men that I liked up to that point. I slept with them because you got to do what you got to do. But I didn't really like find friends in a lot of gay men, and I found friends there.
From a different angle, looking back on that album from 30 years later, what are your thoughts?
Fabulous. I like it a lot. I feel like it helped me grow, helped me get a little bit of notoriety so people took me a little more serious. I'm happy that I did it, that's all I can say. I mean, I'm in the Smithsonian, come on.
That's indeed an honor.
It really is. I mean, when I got the letter on that, I went, what is it now? And Michael goes, read that again, would you? You're not paying attention. And I went, oh, wow. I have two songs in the Smithsonian.
During our talk, I asked Chris about some of the other artists, for example, Blackberry.
Blackberry, I knew Blackberry from before. I knew him from San Francisco when I would go down there to visit, shared bills several times in different events or gay day we'd sing to, you know, be on the same stage. To me, his songs on the album are the best. I think his When Will the Ignorance End is just so poignantly simple and perfect. And the way he sings it is so cool. And if you've ever got to hear him live, he's just beautiful.
The song Chris was talking about is called When Will the Ignorance End? And before you hear it, I want to give just a thumbnail history on a couple of the references, since some of my listeners may not know about the politics of 1978. The Briggs Amendment in California was defeated that year, but if passed, it would have banned gays from teaching in public schools. And the Bakke Supreme Court decision held that for college admissions, affirmative action was constitutional, but a quota system based on race was not. I interviewed Blackberry for my November 2001 show, but at that time I did not have the Eric Gordon documentary, so I'd like to share from it Blackberry talking about his song, When Will the Ignorance End? Remember, please be kind considering the sound quality of this quote, as it's from the weekend the album was created.
When Will the Ignorance came about, I'm around the Briggs work that I was doing with people who were doing Briggs work in San Francisco. Some people seemed to be that the only concern was to gay rights. And being a third world person and being a person who's also conscious of sexism, I realized that that gay rights is just a part of it. There are a lot of other things that tie into it. There's racism that ties into it, and it's just real hard to separate those struggles. And I didn't feel real single issue oriented. And I kind of wrote the song for them, stating it mentions Bakke and gay rights and ERA, which is all these new waves of oppression that are happening. And I mean, it's just part of the attack. I mean, the attack on gay people is just part of the attack. I think white gay people have to realize that, have to start aligning themselves with women and the struggles of third world people if we're going to get any kind of strength at all, because there's a lot of divisions, and when one minority loses, everybody loses. Nobody wins till everybody wins.
Lover of mine, sweet lover of mine, I love you more with every single passing day. Lover of mine, sweet lover of mine, we choose to love each other only openly, gay. When will the ignorance end? When will humankind learn to be friend? We lost the battle in Miami, and that ain't all. No, that ain't all. No, that ain't all. You know we even lost some human rights. Yes, we did now, and oh, say. That ain't all, you know, we even lost that same old fight.
Chris Tanner had some fond comments on Willie.
Yeah, give Willie my love, too. He was great. I mean, he had a full deck, let me tell you, when we all showed up, this room full of men, and he handled it really well. He was very organized and a blessing that he got the whole thing going and got it done. He figured out how we would sort of do the whole process and stuff. He just did a really good job.
I want to mention again that the recording included an amazing 12-page booklet with a lengthy introduction that gives a candid recounting on the evolution of the project and what goals were met and not met and how that changed. The booklet includes lyrics to all the songs and photos of the artists, and of course, you can see it all on my site. The booklet also discusses how they changed the original working title for the project, Men Against Sexism, because they felt the material did not reach that goal strongly enough. Going back to the Eric Gordon documentary, here's a short clip where they discuss the album title.
I don't know what the title would be. I have an idea of a subtitle. It would be Stories of Changing Men, or something like that.
Hey, why don't you put that up on the title?
No, that would be the subtitle, though. Because I'd like a title with this. Not that. Walls to Roses, Stories of Changing Men, or something like that.
And the album became exactly that.
Father, I can't see how you saw me an athlete. I sweated each season for you. I thought that these fingers did better with singers, but I needed a smile from you. The day of the series, I played pretty dreary, and I broke my left elbow for you. I know I disgraced you, I just couldn't face you, and I cried all night in my room. Well, I've gotta tell you that I'm glad it's over. I've waited so long just to be your friend. I hope you've erased all your thoughts about baseball. I'm feeling so good about you. Golly gee, Moses, walls are tumbling to the ground. I can see roses springing up all around.
Earlier, you heard Jeff Langley's demo of the song, but that was a little of the ultimate version sung by Kenny Arkin. I want to get back to the album's producer, Willie Sardillo, for one more question from him.
Well, I think you've probably touched on my next question, but what did you learn from the Walls to Roses experience?
Well, I learned, the big question. I certainly learned a lot about collective work, about the need to let go of my vision in favor of a group kind of consciousness.
Let me shift that question a different way. Looking back on that album from almost 30 years later,
yep.
What are your thoughts?
Well, it was a glorious time. You know, it was very intense. It was a bit trippy in many ways. You know, there wasn't a lot of sleeping going on during those 4 days we were together. I love it. I mean, it was one of those great, crazy, wild things you do when you don't know any better. I'm really glad we did it.
I opened the show with Charlie Murphy, and I love his work, so I am very pleased to also share with you some of an interview I did with him. In the 70s, there was a well-established women's music movement. Why do you think nothing similar ever developed for men's music?
No, I think that there were attempts. You know, there were men's conferences around that time, which, became a platform for me and my music, and but it never sort of developed in a similar way as the women's music movement did.
Personally, I think the women had the need for the feminist bonding, so they were more organized.
Yeah, there was more behind what they were doing, maybe more of a need.
What was it like touring in those early days? What kind of gigs and crowds?
It was a lot of fun. Gosh, you know, you're taking me way back, because we're talking what? We are talking the 70s. I did a lot of touring on my own, and then I did touring with friends, you know, people like Blackberry and Chris Tanner and other folks, connected with the people on the Walls to Roses record. I think that's the first recording I ever did.
Yeah.
And
that was my next question. How did you get involved with Walls to Roses?
Good question. I'm trying to remember, because I was living in Virginia at the time. I had left my position with the Mental Health Services of Virginia and living in a cabin in the Blue Ridge Mountains, and had more spacious time on my hands, and so I got much more into songwriting. And I actually totally, how did I connect with that? I can't even remember. Somebody involved with it heard of me and invited me to be a part of it.
Well, I know Willie Sardillo said that they were, you know, seeking out submissions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I heard of it, and maybe I submitted something, and I think that's how I got involved. Gosh, you know, I'll have to think about that. So long ago.
What did you learn from that experience?
What did I learn? I learned that there was a network of caring, supportive men, both gay and straight, that were capable of supporting one another. And I learned more about my own voice as a musician. Yeah, it was my first project. I mean, this is something I haven't thought about in such a long time.
Yeah, it's been about 30 years. Looking back on that album from 30 years, what are your thoughts of it?
My thoughts about it are that it was, I think it was a really sincere, a heartfelt offering. And I thought, you know, for its time, it broke some ground.
Well, I do, too. I've always considered it a landmark album because it was gay and straight, openly queer material in a various artists' album.
Yeah, yeah. I really appreciated the gay and straight part of it. I think that was unique and important at the time.
During those few days working with that collective, was there an artist you particularly bonded with?
Oh, gosh. You know, I just remember, for me, it was just kind of like a feast of wonderful people. You know, Charlie King, Jeff Morgan, you know, Willie was such a wonderful man, Fred Small, you know, all of these people and all of the people involved. It was a very, very good-natured group of people.
Well, unfortunately, I could not share with you every one of the 10 songs on the album, but I hope I gave you a good taste of both the music and the message of Walls to Roses. I'm down to the last song, but before I get to it, I want to thank you all for listening. And I want to especially thank Willie Sardillo, Chris Von Tanner, and Charlie Murphy for the wonderful interviews. And I'm grateful to the Pacifica Archives for providing me with Eric Gordon's radio documentary. I want to mention that this hour's show could not possibly contain all of the thoughtful and interesting comments I got in the interviews. But you can hear complete versions on my website. And that includes a special feature covering all of Charlie Murphy's music career. Of course, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston. I'm going to close the show with the way I opened it, with Charlie Murphy's song, Gay Spirit, this time letting you hear the entire song. And of course, I ask him to comment on the song. When I first started doing my show, Queer Music Heritage, for almost the first 3 years, I used your song, Gay Spirit, to open the show. Can you tell me about that song?
You know, again, it was simply an expression of my exuberance and enthusiasm at the time for my own, you know, self-discovery and what I thought gay people could offer to the wider world.
When we were born, they tried to cover our eyes. Then they tried to tell us all what to see. We are discovering that did not work, for we were born to be free. It's a gay spirit singing in our hearts, leading us through these troubled times. It's a gay spirit moving around this land, calling us to a time of open love. When we were born, they tried to put us all in a cage, then tell our bodies what to feel. We have chosen to feel all the truth that our bodies do reveal. The gay spirit singing in our hearts, leading us through these troubled times. The gay spirit moving round this land, calling us to a time of open love.
Coming alive in you and me. There's a gay spirit singing in our hearts, leading us through these troubled times. It's a gay spirit moving round this land, calling us to a time of open love. Land, calling us to a time of open.